I'm here to talk about a specific program that we managed out of the Immunization Services Division in concert, of course, with our grantees, and that is the ERA vaccine program. ERA stands for the American, Recovery and Reinvestment Act, and that was instituted in 2009 and completed in 2010, the end of our fiscal year in 2010. I'm trying to figure out how to click. Okay.
Left.
Down. There. All right. Very good. Okay, so we'll talk a little bit about background of some of the vaccine program, talk about one of the very important aspects of the success of the program, which is the reporting, the underlying informatics tools, and then some of the lessons learned, and then open for questions. So important kind of backdrop on understanding the ERA program and the relative success is that the cost of vaccinating a child from birth to 18 years has dramatically increased over the years. And you can see from 1990, where we're at under 100, to 2010. And this slide needs to be updated, but we're up to over $1,400. And a lot of that, you can see there is definitely increases in cost, but a lot of it is our advances in the area of vaccination. And So one of the very important things is, the funding sources related to that. You can see that over the years, the Vaccine for Children's program has kept up with those costs and has been supporting the immunization of children that are targeted in that area. And Vaccine for Children's is there's four areas that are covered: Medicaid, uninsured, underinsured, and then American Indian and Native American. And so those populations are covered. Another funding source is called 317, and that's really the kind of filling in the gaps. And as you can see, whereas VFC, which is an entitlement program, has kept up and has grown with the cost of vaccines, the Section 317 has remained pretty stable, pretty flat since even from the 1990s. So one of the things that the ERA program provided was an opportunity to fill some of those gaps. And so what I wanted to talk about was, some of the results of that, but also some of the underlying informatics that went into supporting this project. So we were, grantees were awarded $168 million in vaccine purchases. And combined with that were also some awards for the infrastructure. You can't have vaccine and not be able to administer it, have the staff and infrastructure to administer it. It was one-time funding. It was available to the CDC 317 immunization grant programs. That's the 50 states, island territories, and four metropolitan cities. Funds were made available June 2009 through August 2010. So, what did we do? What did everybody do with this? So, the intent or the original intent of the program was to fill the gaps. And so, how did we do with that? So here's you know, what the ultimate outcome was. And one thing is that currently, though many states do collect and report doses administered information on routine vaccines, it is not consistent across the board nationally. And so what we needed to do to track this and to understand whether we were successful was to track by orders. And I'll get into how we did that, the underlying systems. But this is what the funds were used for. So you can see that a lot of it went to filling the gaps in the non-flu pediatric area that I pointed out, as well as some of the in the area of adult and a big area in flu. And then these are some of the vaccines that were very prevalent that the grantees tended to focus in on, and those tend to be if you go back to the original slide, those tend to be the newer vaccines, the less where there's less coverage, but also where they're much more costly. Often you'll find that the 317 program, in order to cover more, many times the grantees will go for some of the lower cost vaccines as opposed to some of the higher costs. So ARRA allowed us to fill a number of the gaps. Most commonly, the more expensive and the newer vaccines, as well as some of the vaccines that are not commonly provided by the 317 program. So the ARRA program was very successful in allowing us to supplement the uncovered areas, and points to, even in this very difficult time of budget cutbacks, the need to continue to work towards getting additional funding to cover these gaps. So how did we, you know, underlying this, and this is, there were many factors, success factors, but underlying this was, of course, informatics tools. And this is kind of a little busy slide here, but this represents the legacy systems under which we were working at the time. We have since moved away from this, but this is what we were working with during the ARRA program. And then just, I don't know if I can point, yeah, I guess I can. So just real quickly, going from left to right, out in the hinterlands, we have about 44,000 providers that are participants between the 317 and the VSC programs. And then in the legacy system, vaccine requests are entered, are submitted to the grantees via phone, via fax, via email. So very manual. Those go to the grantees, and then those are in turn manually entered into an order entry system locally, then transmitted to the central copy at CDC, and that system is called VACMAN, is called VACMAN. And then from there, those orders are filtered through our contract and budget system to ensure that there is enough funding before they're then ultimately submitted to the manufacturers for direct ship and distributor for the other non-direct ship orders. Now, when orders come through in this system, this is a centralized distribution system. So CDC is responsible for purchasing all vaccines and distributing them throughout the country. When those orders are made by the providers and by the grantees, they have no funding identity at the time that they're entered. And so how we deal with that, how we actually apply funding identity, is through a system called VOFA, which is another legacy system, which is set up very similar to VACMAN, in which each grantee has a local copy, and then they transmit their changes to us essentially at CDC. information from VOFA is combined from the orders that come out of VACMAN into the data warehouse to create what we call monitoring reports. Monitoring reports tell us how well we're doing against our target funds at a grantee level. The spend plan identifies at the NDC level how much I'm going to spend on vaccine by fund source by month, and we use that information to apply to the orders. And one of the reasons we have to do that is to maintain agility in our inventory at McKesson. So, whoops, I keep doing that. Sorry. So that's the kind of environment that we were working under with the ERA program. And a critical piece to our success, among many other, is the whole monitoring of the vaccine. And so this piece here was very critical, and as you can see, reliant on numerous areas to ultimately provide that information. Oh, wrong. Let's see. I do want to go. Oh, I'm sorry. We already kind of gone through here, but just to kind of refresh. So there are multiple legacy systems that we supported this effort. The first one is VACMAN, which was the order entry system. The second one is NIPVAC, which was the budget and contract information that ensures that the grantees have the budget to process the orders. VOFA, which is the spend plan, data warehouse, and then very complex set of Excel-based monitoring reports, and ultimately a leveraging off the normal reports was the ERA report. Now the good news, and we are in transition right now, is that we have moved away from that multiple legacy system environment, and so future programs such as this, where we need to have a focused reporting or analysis, will be much easier. So our current our transitional and future environment involves a system called VTRAX. I'm not here to talk details about that, but I can tell you that it replaces the three legacy systems, the NIPVAC, the VACMAN, and the VOFA, and we're currently in transition. Our whole back end right now is on VTRAX, but the front end where orders will be entered is still in transition. So with that underlying background, one of the most important things for us, at least at the CDC level, was to provide a reporting and analysis function that would allow grantees to understand where they were, and also providing new and different information that grantees didn't previously have, that would allow them to make mid-course changes to their plans. And another important thing, besides having the report, and this is a little busy slide, and was of course the need to be in constant communication about this at all levels. But this report provided for the first time new information, crossed fiscal years, and provided information about, you know, not only where am I, but what do I need to still plan, you know, how well did I do against my original plans, and how do I need to adjust. So what are some of the lessons learned from this? First of all, as I just mentioned, the regular reporting helped keep a very close focus on the program. And keeping in mind that the orders representing coverage, I mean, it's not just spending the money, it's representing coverage, additional coverage, and improved vaccination rates, and therefore lowering incidence of disease. So regular reporting very much kept a focus on the program. We did go to weekly reporting, though our normal approach to vaccine tracking is monthly. And so that was a little bit excessive, we found. And so for future reference, we would probably keep to the monthly reporting. We also, as I mentioned, provided new information that was very important to grantees that they didn't previously have that helped them understand progress against target and how to make mid-course adjustments. And so that had, we also provided program to date amounts against target crossing fiscal years, amounts planned but not used, and amounts not yet planned. Probably one of the, you know, the big lessons learned is, you know, understanding issues posed by multiple systems. In the legacy environment in particular, version control always had been an issue. When you have multiple copies, when you have you rely on people to download the latest version, you can have version control issues where a grantee is out of sync and may not be on their most recent version. Timing, in terms of you know, the data, when data is actually uploaded and when the reports are run, so that you might be missing certain information in looking at the report. And then data definitions. And a good example is, you know, as a spend plan, providing reports based on orders entered, transmitted, or received versus other reports that we were doing to reconcile to. So that was very important, understanding the data definitions among the reporting elements. Another thing is flexibility, of course, always. And that was during this time, H1N1 hit, we had the zoster shortage. A lot of people were going to do major zoster programs and were unable to do so and had to make quick adjustments in their planning. And, of course, providing the information to make quick adjustments to their programs. So lessons learned, we actually are applying all of the lessons learned from ERA to our routine reporting and monitoring. Particularly this year we're focusing in on the 317 funding for 2011, and beginning in 2012 we will do that on a regular basis. This has also helped us inform the development of the VTRAC system for spend plan and reporting. So we'll be building into our spend plan reports the 317 or the ERA-like report that's on the docket. It also has helped us understand, even in an integrated system such as VTRAC, that there still are some timing issues as data is moved from module to module. And we look to incorporating some of the ERA reporting into the other funding sources in future. And as you can see, future, state and local, as well as VFC funds. This also helped us, as I mentioned, we're in a transition phase between the legacy system and the full use of VTRAC. And so this has helped us understand better any timing issues that we might have with the current environment. And that's it. I do want to acknowledge, of course, number one is our 63 immunization grantees. They do the hard work every day. We work very closely with the vaccine managers, the program managers, and the state health officers. This was at that level that they were, we communicated with them initially, and then as we got down to the wire. Also, I wanted to recognize Sashawn Henderson, who helped lead the coordinating effort at the CDC side, as well as colleagues in the branch I'm in, the Vaccine Supply and Assurance Branch, the vaccine advisors in particular, my teammates, program office branch project officers. They have the hard task of you know, if things are not going well, to kind of have discussions. And then, of course, the leadership team and ASTO and AIM. And if you need any questions or have questions or want to know it more, here is my information as well as Sachon's. So that's it. That was quick. Any questions?
Thank you, Jeannie.
Okay.
Yeah, I find the geography of the vaccine program is very complex. So VTRAX is going to accommodate the needs of private providers in the Vaccines for Children program, as well as 317 grantees, is that right? And each have fairly distinct sets of requirements,
That's right. And did you want to say anything? It turns out that Nabil, who runs the system, is here.
Oh, there you go. Let me just see if I can organize my question. It seems like the whole workflow of a health department ordering vaccine for their 317 project is probably somewhat distinct from the other. And is that a, or is it highly integrated at this point?
Go ahead. Well, from a ordering perspective, they are fairly integrated. 317, though, what we're finding is often, you know, a state will make a decision to focus in on adult only versus pediatric. But from a system standpoint,
systems perspective, they are pretty much integrated. So the system has the capability of having multiple funding sources available. And then the vaccines, they can be specific vaccines, they can be tied to those funding sources. So this is the way how the ordering, it takes place.
I did that consumer questions asked before as immunization registries seek to understand which system it should link to and to have.
Yeah, VTRAX does have an interface with the immunization registry, so we call them EXIS or EXIS interface external information systems, and they can just upload all the information into VTRAX, and the processing of all those orders, it actually gets done in VTRAX.
Jeannie, can you tell us more about the grantees and the geography that's and the underlying population that those grantees serve? There's 62.
There's 63, and those are the state immunization programs across the country, the island territories, and the four metropolitan areas, New York, Chicago, Philadelphia, and... No. They're almost exactly like the preparedness, but not quite. The other one is... Houston.
So in terms of coordination across the cross-jurisdictional issues where a metro area might cover more than one state, or it may has to coordinate with its state funding, how does that work, and how does the system function in terms of that?
You know, we do have first of all, we're able to track at the provider level, at the grantee level, clearly who, you know, where the orders are coming from. So the fact that, you know, so the cross-jurisdictional, I don't know, is so much of an issue. From our perspective, certainly if you're in the trenches, there may be a concern that you're providing vaccine to people who should be getting it over in this other state. But when they're entering the orders, you know, it's being entered in that state. So, you know, we don't really think about that or do anything about it. It's more on the state or local level to deal with that. So I could envision, like, you could have kids going to New York from New Jersey, and New York is their budget's being decremented you know, as a result. So they have an incentive, you know, to make sure that that's not the case through their screening and so forth. So I don't think that's, so that we don't deal with that. We do deal with some of the, you know, how we, you know, how we allocate some of our 317 funds between the metropolitan cities and the states, and that's probably a detail that people will snooze about. So, but other than that, I can't think of anybody else. Other questions?
I just to understand that 62 preparedness areas does not correspond.
Not quite. Almost, but not quite. They're, you know, there's a little bit different because you have LA is separate, but we don't. It's just California. So.
So if you had, looking at the pre and post systems, right? If you had two indicators of success, what were the two highlights?
The pre and post. What do you mean?
Well, you showed the in terms of the informatics solutions, how the system was established initially, and then post with new informatics tools. And
well, I think, you know, I think probably the biggest advantage, I mean, there's so many advantages with the new one, you know, the integration, you know, that can be good and bad. You know, master data is king in an integrated system. So if anything goes wrong with master data, then everything is affected. Whereas if you have individual systems, you make one change here, you know, if it goes wrong there, it's isolated versus another. So I think the integration piece is really wonderful. You know, the native reporting that's going to be in there. You know, then there's the technology. I mean, we're moving away from the fax, the phone, the emails, and into, you know, direct data entry of the orders. We're not there yet, and I don't know, Nabil, if you have any comments.
Yeah. Jeannie.
Hi.
I just want to compliment you on because the interface works great for Michigan with VTRAX, and we place like 700 orders a month, and we really have minimal issues. And that was, we appreciated the fact that we could be in the pilot. You know, it's tough to be a pilot, but it was nice that you considered an interface. So thank you.
Good to hear.
Dr. Sapkota.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Jenny, for the good presentation. In the case of pandemic influenza, from the states and the local perspective, they would want to, it will be easy for them to they'll be needing the antiviral at the same time, the vaccines, and the vaccines for like pre-pandemic, you know, in a scenario vaccine, and then once the pandemic hits, that they will be needing from, the countermeasures like, antivirals. From the east and the for the benefits of the locals, and I think they would be needing a system that talks that has the capability or the functionality that can handle both the vaccine at the same time in the antiviral in the same system, and we heard prior to your presentation how IMAT is kind of helping states track predominantly the antivirus, and then your system is more towards the vaccines. Is there a way that these two systems could talk to each other for the benefits of the state, and during an event like pandemic influenza? Would you think that it would be benefit for them to kind of for us to have kind of integration? Or
well, I'll comment just from programmatic, and then maybe Nabil can comment from technology. But programmatically. There's always that nervousness of, this is the routine stuff that has to, it's high volume. It must remain in operation no matter what is going on with say H1N1 or whatever. So there's always that push and pull of do you combine the two or do you have separate, because they're very different animals. And so, the thought, I think we talked about the registries could interface with IMATS and they interface with us, so, you know, that probably is where it would be, but there's always that, you know, concern about having a preparedness system, you know, that could potentially undermine the day-to-day, but I don't know, Nabil, if you have any comments, technically.
Yeah. During the emergency event, more than 30 days.
Yes, from VTRAC's perspective, VTRAC does have the capability. It's merely if you have any product, you just enter that product into the master list. It's pretty much available to the grantees to order that one. But from your perspective, the question that you asked, yes, I think there are a number of opportunities that can be explored. And there has been some initial discussion, and we basically are looking forward to have further discussion among the both project teams to see where are the opportunities and how we can leverage those ones.
So this might be, I'm new to this field. So is this system actually capturing not only ordering, but also delivery and inoculations and vaccinations?
That's where I was saying that it's inconsistent. Part of when a provider enters their orders, some states require that they enter doses administered information, which is the actual inoculation. But it is by no means consistent across the board. And I don't know if anybody knows what the number is, but it's not a requirement. We have it. It's a capability, but it is not a requirement. And I don't know whether it's 50%, 75%, or 25%. I don't know whether anybody knows. But we do have that. Yeah, definitely we have that capability.
And then this might be for Nabil, but in terms of this new enterprise architecture, which is essentially what this is, are there codified data sets for quality checks or are local vocabularies used somehow of how something's ordered, or are things so standardized that that's not a non-issue?
The standards mainly which are used is obviously the NDC, which is the National Drug Codes. All the products from that perspective, they are being used. The interfaces that we have for the EDI perspective, I believe they are on the X10 or X12, which is pretty much a standard out there. And they use the EDI or the electronic data interchange.
So it uses NDCs and not GPIs, right?
Yeah, and if I might comment on the NDCs, we have what we call a formulary. We have the national formulary that has all of our NDCs that are on contract and have ever been on contract, and so that's the standard. And then each of the states they're able to customize their formularies so that it's unique to what they're allowing their providers to order. Even if it's available, their finance policy may not allow them. So we do have, you know, standards across, particularly the NDC is a vital piece of information.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? So I'd like to offer a round of applause for our speakers. Thank you for a great session. Actually, there is one more question. Barbara, what type of refreshments are you offering at 11:30?